This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We're about to look back on the history of one of the most celebrated bands of the 60s and 70s. The band was simply called The Band. It got that name when it backed up Bob Dylan. My guest was the band's chief songwriter, Robbie Robertson. This is one of his best-known songs. Box set of the band's recordings is coming out next month on Capitol Records. Robbie Robertson has had a solo career since the band split up in 1976. His latest album is a hybrid of rock and Native American music. Robertson is part Mohawk and spent summers with his mother's family on the Six Nations Reservation in Canada. He spent the rest of the year in Toronto. The songs on his new album, Music for the Native Americans, were written for this month's TV series, The Native Americans, on TBS. Here's one of the songs.
I think I'll go on back to Shenandoah. She said that she'd meet me by the fork in the road. I jump start my one-eyed foot.
Robbie Robertson and the Red Road Ensemble. Robertson left home at the age of 16 to go on the road with the group Ronnie Hawkins and the Hawks. One of the members was Levon Helm, who later co-founded the band with Robertson. Levon Helm was from the Mississippi Delta. Robertson told me what it was like the first time he traveled south to the Delta to play with Hawkins and Helms.
First of all, the idea of going from Toronto down to this place, I thought I was going to where the source of all of this music came from. So I was very excited about this, and I was incredibly impressed with just the way of life, the people, how musical everything was. I understood how come there was so much music in this area once I got there, and the names of all the places and everything. Oh, it just worked for me like mad.
You know, later with the band, you started writing very southern sounding and very lyrically southern songs, you know, like The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down. Did you start to think of yourself as southern? Were you trying to write as if you were southern, or were you trying to capture a southern flavor even though you were from the great north?
No, what this was, it made such a powerful impression on me at 16 years old, at such an impressionable age. And I took this in, and in some ways it was similar to when I was very young and when I went to Six Nations. When you have the opportunity to walk into these worlds and you don't take them for granted, you're incredibly in awe of these places. And then it was, I don't know how many years later, but from when I first went down there, I wrote these songs probably 7-8 years later.
Well, let's hear The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down. My guest is Robbie Robertson, and this is The Band.
Virgil Caine is the name, and I served on the Danville train till Stallman's cavalry came and tore up the tracks again. In the winter of 65, we were hungry, just barely alive. By May the 10th, Richmond had fell. It's a time I remember oh so well. The night they drove old Dixie down, and the bells were ringing.
Robbie Robertson is my guest. And he has a new album, by the way, called Robbie Robertson and the Red Road Ensemble, Music for the Native Americans. So what was the period like after Ronnie Hawkins left the band and it became basically the prototype of the band?
Well, what happened was it was kind of the other way around. The Hawks left Ronnie because there was a certain mold that he was comfortable in. There was, you know, just a club circuit that he wanted to play. And we were all a few years younger than him, and we wanted to more adventure. We didn't want to think that this is the way it was always going to be. So we left him and kind of set out into the world once again. In the first while, it was kind of rough for us, but we managed, and it wasn't too long after we left him, I don't know, maybe a year or something, and we hooked up with Bob Dylan.
What was it like for you in the early days of playing with Dylan when you would often get booed by fans who thought that he should stay a folky?
Well, there was times when I wasn't sure that I disagreed with him, that maybe he should stay a folky, because we got booed all over the United States. We went to Australia, they booed us. All over Europe, they booed us. And we were getting better. When it first started out, it was pretty rough. But it was actually starting to take form and find itself. But the audience was kind of on a mission. You would come to these concerts more to partake in the ritual of booing than you would really to listen to the music. But it was like we were the bad guys in the situation. And there was a lot of people around saying, listen, you better get rid of these guys. I mean, they're ruining everything. And I have to commend him on just his patience or else his hard-headedness, I'm not sure which, but he stuck by it, and he believed in it.
Now, how did the band start establishing its identity nationally as a group separate from Dylan?
Well, after we did this tour, we moved up to Woodstock, and we got this house up there, a place really just to go and do some writing and like a clubhouse kind of place, and where we would just congregate every day. And we went there and we started writing some songs, and Bob would come every day and we would hang out. And it was just kind of a very relaxed music situation. There was just, completely no pressure in what we were doing. And Bob started writing some songs. I started writing some songs. Richard Manuel was doing some writing. And out of this came the Basement Tapes. The infamous Basement Tapes, I guess, that became like one of the first largely bootleg records ever. And then after that, from these songs, the band recorded its first album, Music from Big Pink.
The band early on anyways didn't really perform. It was a very studio-oriented group, and the studio was basically in the basement. Were you tired of performing by then?
Well, we did. I mean, when Music from Big Pink came out, we didn't go out and do concerts with that record because one of the members of the band, Rick Danko, was in a car accident and he broke his neck and he was in traction for months and we couldn't go out. And something happened. There was, all of a sudden, it was like we were like this mysterious group that made records and never showed up. And when we did, they were these people all dressed in black and looking like, Pennsylvania Dutch people or something, as opposed to rock and roll musicians. And so it just became that kind of
aura,
aura around the group. And then after we did our second album, then we went and played. I mean, we played at Woodstock, we played at Watkins Glen, we played at the Isle of Wight. We played our first concert at Winterland in San Francisco and our last concert there when we did The Last Waltz. But we did a lot of tours in between, and maybe we didn't do it as much as some do, But we did do it a lot, and we'd already done it a lot. We'd been on the road for 8 years before we made Music from Big Pink.
When did you think it was time to leave the band, you personally?
Well, when we did The Last Waltz, I thought that we had run the gamut then, and something was telling me in my gut that that there wasn't much more that we were going to be able to get out of this. And rather than it just see it kind of just dribble out or it become, you know, an unpleasant situation, like, because I was seeing a lot of other groups around breaking up, and it was not under the most pleasant terms, and I thought, we got to try to avoid this if we possibly can. So that's when I suggested to the other guys that we bring this thing, hopefully, to kind of a classy finale, and I thought of this idea of doing The Last Waltz, where we can kind of pay homage to a lot of the people that had influenced us and that we had a lot of respect for in music, and I thought something needs to be done here to kind of just, you know, up the grade of this, whatever it is. And that's when I talked to Martin Scorsese about doing it. And
did you know him already?
I had met him when he did Mean Streets, but I didn't know him very well. And so, anyway, when I met with him and told him about the project, and I told him what I had in mind, because he was saying, geez, you know, this is not a great time for me. I'm in the middle of doing another movie, and, you know, you've caught me at, you know. So when I told him what I had in mind, he said, what am I going to do? I have to do this, you know. And so he proceeded to figure out a way to do it, and we did it on Thanksgiving up in Winterland. And what he did was he made it like he was going to take a little rest, a little Thanksgiving vacation, and we all just slipped up to San Francisco and shot the movie.
When you were ready to leave the band, do you think the rest of the band was ready to disband also?
Well, we, you know, in The Last Waltz, we really weren't talking about disbanding. We were talking about leaving the road behind. It had become to me not a very creative process. It was just kind of a business. And my suggestion was, because I wasn't going to go on the road anymore, but if we wanted that, I was really still, you know, had tremendous respect for the other guys in the band creatively, musically, and I was still interested in experimenting and trying to put the emphasis on trying to make some really good records. And everybody, you know, was kind of understood, you know, what we were talking about. Everybody felt good about this. And after we did The Last Waltz, and in a period of time, because other people had other projects that they wanted to experiment with, too. When I brought this up, you know, some of the other guys said, oh, good, because I want to make a solo album anyway. And it wasn't like there was people pulling in the other direction at all. And then after a period of time, for financial reasons or whatever, they came to me and said, well, listen, you know, we realized that this is a bigger part of our lives than what we had realized at the time, and we want to get back together again and go out and perform. I have no objection to that at all. I just can't be part of it.
So you have a new record now, your Music for the Native Americans, plus there's a CD box set of music from the band that's about to come out on Capitol Records.
Right.
How do you feel about the music on that box set? What kind of emotional connection now do you feel toward the music from the days of the band?
Well, I loved going through all this music. There's a lot of things that I haven't heard in years and had kind of forgotten in some ways how we approached some of the material. And when I went through it all again, I really enjoyed it. And I felt, God, these guys, they just kind of reinvented something in rock and roll. The nature of the music, the way everybody played, the style. I felt very, very proud of it. And I'm really glad, because the band was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year. I thought it was really nice that this band box set was coming out in conjunction with that.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you.
Robbie Robertson has a new album called Music for the Native Americans. A box set retrospective of the band's recordings will be released next month. This is Fresh Air.